child has just looked you in the eyes and said, I'm gay. Now what? Let's talk about it with Chris Torquia and Steve Brown, etc.
He's an old white guy, an author, broadcaster, and seminary professor who's sick of religion. And he's brought friends. Please welcome Steve Brown, etc.
And we are so glad you're here. You always have a seat at our table, or as it were, tables. The name of the program is Steve Brown, etc. And I'm Steve, the aforementioned old white guy. Our Matthew Porter, our executive producer, is with us. Matthew just survived watching all four of his kids the whole weekend without his wife.
Yeah,
Matthew.
Ouch.
What's the secret?
Well, it actually wasn't hard. My wife set me up for success. So really, the real secret is to make it seem like it was hard. So you're like, yeah, me, I'm no hero. You know, I did what anybody else would do. I'll
just said that on the air. Now she knows.
Stephanie out and
asking it on the other dads.
And also
ones that didn't come back.
You and Jesus and stuff. You can get a week out of that if you're smart. George, what did you say?
I just said it's the heroes are the ones that didn't come back.
Matt came back.
Our video director, John Myers, is in his tech bunker for his Christmas light display this year, and it is magnificent. John is doing a tribute to 2020. None of the bulbs work, but they are all 6 feet apart. Have you started putting up that stuff, John?
No, I haven't started putting it up, but it's definitely go time.
And listen, our producer, Jinx, is in his little glass booth. And while his guy wasn't elected president, Jinx is hopeful that Kanye West will score a cabinet position. Right, Jinx?
Ooh, man, if I had time to keep up with his sagas, I'm in the production industry.
And
but
Dr. George Bingham is here. George is still the president of Key Life.
Right, he passed.
No recount is needed. And Kathy Wyatt, of course, is the soft feminine side of the program. You know, Kathy, we joke a lot around here. In all seriousness, I'm still going to get a key lime pie this year, right?
You're not crazy about key lime pie.
Listen, I didn't write it, Matthew.
Oh.
If he knew me, guys, he would have put in cherry pie or
cherry
blueberry
pie or blueberry
with ice
pie.
Cream.
Right. Goodness. Yeah.
Matthew
with
likes key lime pie.
That's what,
yeah, it's all about Matthew, who didn't get
hoping
anything.
Steve goes, no,
birthday.
I don't want that. You can have it.
Matthew's trying to get some key lime pie on my time. And frankly, I resent that. But listen, I'll give you a pass because you'll write something worse than what I am dealing with right now next week. We have a great guest for this program to deal with a very, very difficult topic. Chris Torquia serves as the Parents and Family Ministry Coordinator for Harvest USA. Harvest USA is a great organization, and before Chris was ever born, I served on that board for 100 years, and they deal with issues of sexual brokenness. In his role, Chris cares for hurting parents whose children identify as LGBTQ+. Chris completed his Master of Arts in Counseling at Westminster Theological Seminary. He holds a BA in Intercultural Studies from Lancaster Bible College. He has helped in putting together a new curriculum. We're going to talk about it today from Harvest USA. It's called Shattered Dreams, New Hope, First Aid for Parents Whose Son or Daughter Has Embraced an LGBTQ plus identity. Chris, thanks for taking your time from a busy schedule to be with us. People can get the material that we're going to be talking about, can't they? And they can get it free from Harvest USA.
That's correct. Yeah, you can go to harvestusa.org and just, you'll see, I think the banner is still up, the Shattered Dreams New Hope curriculum.
And they can download it if they're having questions. And this is really good stuff from people who've been doing this for a long time and have learned how to be compassionate and loving and understanding in some very difficult situations. Well, I think we ought to start just in case people don't know, and you could put me in line. Tell us what LGBTQ plus means.
Sure. Well, someone who identifies as LGBTQ plus is basically an acronym that represents a number of sexual or gender identities. So L stands for lesbian, G stands for gay, B bisexual, T transgender, plus is kind of like, there's a Q usually added to that, meaning queer, and plus means just kind of the rest of an alternative sexual or gender identity that someone could identify as.
So you stick a plus down rather than more letters.
Exactly, because nowadays you see
a wise thing. This is getting long.
It is getting long.
Tell us how this developed, why it developed, and some of the things that you guys deal with at Harvest USA.
Sure. Specifically in what I deal with in the parents' ministry, I'd started working with Harvest 7 years ago. And at that time, I was in the men's ministry. So we primarily counsel or care for men that are struggling with all kinds of sexual issues like pornography addiction, other sexual issues, including same-sex attraction, but particularly behavioral things, that sexual sin that men can't seem to stop on their own. So we apply the gospel to these issues in a real practical and powerful way and help men see victory in Christ through these issues. So, and then I started with the parents' ministry at that time. I was single with no kids. And so I guess that qualified me to jump into the parents' group and lead them. But I jumped in there. And at that time, it was mostly just parents who had children that identified as gay. So this is a group of Christian parents who hold the biblical values of sex, sexuality, and gender. But their children are, even if they've grown up in the church, either if they're professing believers or have renounced Christ altogether, they're adopting an identity that surrounds their sexuality, their sexual desires and feelings. So for those who are same-sex attracted, a lot of those children will say, because I've wrestled with these same-sex attractions, therefore I must be gay. And so they adopt this identity based off of their attractions. And of course, Christian parents really struggle with that when their child comes out, so to speak, and says, I'm gay, because they don't hold to those same values as the parents do. And so there's conflicting values there. And there's a struggle because the parents are left with saying, how do I hold on to the truth of Scripture while not pushing my child out altogether or totally affirming them in this direction, but navigating those messy waters of staying in relationship with them while still loving them and holding on to what I know to be true. So that's what I entered into in the parents' ministry, primarily with children with a gay identity. But ever since that Bruce Jenner came out on Time Magazine, I believe it was, and just all the transgender stuff started blowing up in our culture, then I saw more and more these alternative identities, sexual and gender identities. And a lot of, I would say more than half of the parents I minister to now have children that identify as transgender or some other gender identity, like gender fluid or something to that effect. So that's when someone is born biologically, physically male or female, and they feel that they in their experience, in their identity, are an alternative gender, contrary to what their biological sex is. Hope that makes sense.
Now, we're kind of running out of time on this segment, but in the next segment, I want to find out your goal in working with parents and writing this curriculum. We've had John Freeman, who was the founder of Harvest USA and still works with you guys. We've had him on several times. Somebody asked him, "I just found out that my son is gay. What should I do?" And John's simple and pastoral answer was, "Are you crazy? Love them. Just love them." Huh. What a unique and maybe in some cases troubling thought. But we're going to talk with Chris about this on the other side of the break. We're living in some different kinds of times, and I suspect that everybody who's watching or listening right now has a friend or a child who is gay or lesbian or transgender or fluid or whatever. And we need some wisdom in dealing with this.
Hi, this is Eric, producer of Steve Brown, Etc. If you've been listening very long, you know I'm a struggling believer, and I'd love to share some things that have helped. At Key Life, we believe that the deepest message of the ministry of Jesus and the Bible is the radical grace of God for sinners and sufferers. And we have 4 mini books that'll help you believe that no matter what you've done or what you're going through, God's not mad at you. Feeling Guilty, Suffering, and Faith and Doubt by Steve Brown will help you apply healing biblical truth to where it hurts the most. And my mini book, The Gift of Addiction, How God Redeems Our Pain, shows that coming to the end of ourselves is actually the beginning of faith. These 4 mini books are in the Grace for Sinners and Sufferers mini book combo, and it's available at keylife.org for a suggested donation of $12. They're also individually available for a suggested donation of $4.
You're listening to Steve Brown, Etc., and we're so glad you're here. Our guest, Chris, is from Harvest USA, and they've just introduced a new curriculum, and it's titled Shattered Dreams, New Hope, First Aid for Parents Whose Son or Daughter Has Embraced an LGBTQ+ Identity. And if you go to harvestusa.org, if you're struggling with some of this, they'll give it to you free. You just go and you can download it. And it is really good and wise and biblical material, and you'll find it helpful. Chris, before the break, I quoted John Freeman in answer to somebody who asked what to do about their son who had said he was gay. And John said, "Are you crazy? Love him. Just love him." And so the question that I think all of us and the people who are watching and listening at the radio stations is, are you in the fixing profession? I mean, have you designed this to give ammunition to upset and angry parents to show them how to change their kids and make them good the way they are?
The obvious answer to that would be, of course, not. Absolutely not. Just the opposite, really. A lot of, you know, the simple answer is, of course, the call that we encourage is just, you got to love them. But working through the complexities of what that means is another question. And a lot of where parents are at, maybe initially perhaps, is I need to devote all the resources that I can to help my child get back on the right path, to renounce this identity and to get right with God, and to essentially just repent of this behavior. And of course, that's going to be a thought that runs through any parent's mind and heart, but they quickly realize that when they try to reason with their child, that this issue is much more complex, and it's to no avail trying to argue and give their child books or resources. You know, that their child is at this point usually far along with their exploration of these things. And the parent has to confront the reality that they don't have the ability and tools to change their child and affect the kind of change that they're looking for. So this is really where we're meeting parents in their experience of hardship in that way. So I can get into a number of things we do to care for parents in this place if you'd like, but I'll let you ask the questions.
George.
Well, Chris, you know, it seems like just from a cultural media standpoint that this has, you know, progressed frequency, I guess, familiarity and so forth of people just dramatically in recent years. I mean, we had a recent with the interviewing the Supreme Court perspective, Supreme Court justice, the whole issue came up of whether or not the use of the term sexual preference was somehow a violation of people in terms of suggesting that it was somehow a preference versus an innate something that they were born with and couldn't choose. What influence do you see in terms of the culture and where it's been going, and especially as expressed through the media, in the issues that you're dealing with and that parents are dealing with, kids, families are dealing with?
Yeah, I think the most significant issue that the culture has influence over is that this issue of identity, of this question of who am I? And, you know, it's one thing, and I think you would all agree that we're all sexually broken. We all wrestle with desires that are contrary to God's design for sexuality between one man, one woman, in the context of marriage. And so wrestling with sexual temptations for an opposite gender person or a same-sex, you know, desire that you might struggle with, we all wrestle with sexual issues, and we all have questions to some degree, and it's normative for someone to wrestle with their gender as well. But when we take those broken attractions and we're in especially a young child, like in their teenage years or college years, and they're placed in a culture that celebrates these alternative sexual or gender identities, mm-hmm. it's a very confusing and difficult road for a child to navigate through on their own. And because often the church doesn't speak about these issues. And when they're wrestling with their attractions, they're wrestling with what is my place in the world? How do I fit in? And all their peers, or most of their peers, seem to really affirm a transgender or gay identity. There's an alluring proposal there for a connectedness with community, a sense of belonging, a sense of affirmation or love that they might not have gotten elsewhere. And so I think that's the biggest key factor, is the relational pool and desires seemingly being met in this identity that really sweeps a lot of young people into this.
Maybe the change needs to be in the church, you think? A creation of a community where these issues are discussed honestly and compassionately. You say that doesn't happen much. Do you see it changing?
The church is beginning to wake up a little bit more now, because it's kind of it's a hot button issue in our culture and it's in our face. But I think the church has a long way to go to be a safe place for Christians wrestling with real broken desires that need to be processed in an honest, healthy way, so that we're not dealing with the foregone conclusions of a child saying, you know what, I've wrestled with this for years, and this is my conclusion that I can't come up with any other answer. I believe I am gay, and God either accepts this and affirms it, or he's rejecting me. But you know what, this is what I know to be true about myself. And they've already navigated that on their own or in their community, and the church has not had a voice in a time where that child is impressionable and ready and perhaps willing to see a different alternative paradigm for understanding their struggles.
So I wonder, and we can maybe answer this on the other side of the break. But you know, I've had friends on both sides of this, both the kids, you know, saying this to their parents, and the parents, their kids having it said to them. I'm curious to know what's the immediate need. Obviously they love on their kids, but they have a new set of needs as parents, you know, of processing this and dealing with it and figuring out what do I do next. And I'm the only one of my friends that I know who's going through this. It's probably just me. On the other side of the break, I'd love to get your thoughts on, in the immediate term, after this conversation happens, what are their needs and how can they be served?
Great question. We'll look at it on the other side of the break. Our guest is Chris Torquia from Harvest USA. You go to harvestusa.org if you have questions. If you have questions particularly about this subject, then you can download free Shattered Dreams, New Hope. Right now, our hope is to take a rest because this is really hard work. We'll take a nappy nap and then we'll return.
From Key Life comes two mini books, What Do You Do for a Living? And Life After Retirement. What Do You Do for a Living by Justin Holcomb addresses the problem of defining ourselves by what we do and how we perform in our work instead of by who we know, a gracious, loving God who defines who we are. Life After Retirement by Steve Brown examines how those transitioning from work to retirement often experience a loss of purpose in life, and how the quest for personal significance can best be answered by God's radical grace, love, and purpose for our lives sufficient to carry us through this transition. What Do You Do for a Living and Life After Retirement can help guide people struggling with either work or retirement. These two Key Life mini books are available through keylife.org for a donation of $6.
Listening to Steve Brown, etc. And if you like what you're hearing, be sure and find and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and Spotify. And if you go to keylife.org, you can get links to all of those places and the video version of this particular show.
Chris, on the other side of the break, we had talked about kind of just kind of picturing that moment where this conversation has happened, where a son or a daughter comes out to their parents. Now, obviously, in that situation, we're all on the same page. What the kid needs is to be loved, to be, you know, the parent to be Jesus to them. But in an instant, suddenly the parents have a new set of needs as well. They need to know how does that flesh out? Am I alone in this? What am I supposed to do? I've got to imagine. Well, it says it in the subtitle of your curriculum, first aid. It's a traumatic event that they're going to be reeling from. And obviously in that moment is where this curriculum, Harvest USA, kind of enters the picture. Can you talk a little bit about what parents need in that moment? And, you know, how does community play into that and so forth?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think the biggest thing, like you said, it is for most parents. Some parents suspect this or have inclinations of it, so it's less of a shock factor. Mm-hmm. But many, many parents are shocked and devastated over this news, just because it's a lot to process. And so I think that what often happens, like I said, a lot of times the initial reaction is I need to do everything I can in my control to fix this situation. And that's just the knee jerk reaction. But often parents neglect paying attention to what's happening in their heart. I say often that when a child comes out of the closet, a lot of times parents go in the closet and they start to fear, you know, what will other people think of me if they know this, you know, and not feeling like anyone can identify with what they're going through and feel a lot of shame and regret for different things they're thinking of and their parenting, not catching this sooner, whatever comes to mind. And so I think the biggest thing they need is to invite others, invite God into their, how they're processing this. A lot of parents describe this like a death in the family. They are grieving the loss, and that's that shattered dreams, the loss of the child they thought they had, and coming to terms with where their child is really at in their process and what this may look like in the future. So it even looks like grieving a normal, you know, marriage for their child with heterosexually happy, so to speak, these worldly sorrows that they're really wrestling with and the confusion and fear of what might take place. And so I think what they most need is for, to be honest about that, to not deny it or push it off, but to come to terms with this is in God's hard providence, what he's brought in my life. And I need to invite someone who could at least start to understand and listen to what my experience is like. And then from there, the next step would be, I need to understand my child to a deeper extent. I need to ask them their story. How did you come to the point you're at today? What was it like growing up in our family, wrestling with these desires and et cetera, et cetera. And from there, I think it slowly becomes adopting, okay, this might not be the story I want to write for my children, but the Lord might be writing a different story that he is still in the midst of and still can produce good from. But it may not go according to my liking or my timing.
You know, one of the criticisms we get here at Key Life a lot is from people who say that we've sold out because we've recognized the reality of rebellion and neediness and sin, and that it's universal in everybody. People say, well, you're compromising. You just don't care. That's not true. Mm-hmm. You're not calling on people to compromise biblical and traditional views.
No.
But to recognize that as one sinner, that would be the parents or two sinners dealing with another sinner, we can talk. If we're dealing with parents who think that they've got it together and their convictions can be used as condemnation to guilt people into doing and being what the parents want, at that point, it becomes something less than Christian, doesn't it, Chris?
It does. And I think that's the beauty of walking with parents through this process, because maybe those are those impressions first of what abnormal things their child's doing, and that it's a little more easily for them to sit in judgment or to determine where their child's at. But as they get to know their child, as they wrestle with these things, they realize they're more alike than they are different. And even though it might express itself in this kind of egregious bad fruit on their child's tree, really the underlying desires are very normal that their child's feeling and wanting out of this sexual or gender identity that a lot of parents do also resonate with. That's how I wrestle as a broken person. May not be going to these wells, these broken cisterns, but there are other choice broken cisterns that I go to have desires met, to turn to those idols. And essentially that's at the core of a sexual or gender identity apart from God's design.
Guys, we've got another segment or two to talk about this, and obviously we're just scratching the surface. You ought to go to harvestusa.org and download for discussion Shattered Dreams, New Hope, First Aid for Parents Whose Son or Daughter Has Embraced an LGBTQ+ identity. In fact, this might be a call for you to begin a small group to hold each other's arms up in the church He was irritated when the electricity went out. No television, no music, no Netflix. Then he discovered that the battery on his smartphone was dead. He decided to make some coffee, but when he went to the kitchen, he realized that without electricity, he couldn't even do that. Then he noticed his wife in the kitchen, and he sat down and talked to her. He said later, "You know, she seemed like a very nice lady." I know, technology's good, but sometimes go talk to somebody face to face. You might be surprised how nice and real they are. It's messy sometimes, but Jesus would like it. I'm Steve Brown. You think about that. Share what you just heard with a friend. Go to youthinkaboutthat.com. Chris Torquillas serves as the Parents and Family Ministry Coordinator at Harvest USA. And you ought to go to their website. I mean, we're living in a time when this ministry is profound in the impact it's having on people. And it's doing without judgment and without condemnation and with love that smells like Jesus. After all, he hung out with us. So we ought to be able to hang out with other people like us, needy and sinful and in difficult places.
Chris, you made a reference to the tree model, which seemed very foundational in this curriculum. Can you just give us a brief overview of that?
Sure. The tree model is foundational for all of our direct ministry at Harvest for men, women, and parents. And it basically is based off of the analogy we see a lot in scripture that our behaviors are like the fruit of a tree. And our behaviors are indicative of what's happening inside our hearts. And so the Bible talks some things about sexual issues, about gender to some extent, but the Bible talks a lot more about our inner man and how that affects the behaviors and the things we do on the surface. So our tree model is based off of that metaphor. And we look at things like the behaviors that you're exhibiting or your child's exhibiting, the nature of our hearts being fallen and depraved, but also capable of being deceived, believing lies, and pursuing autonomy away from, you know, pursuing autonomy from God, and just the bent of our the inclination of our hearts, and what that looks like in particular. So we talk a lot about desires, beliefs, and how that relates to our behaviors. You know, idolatrous desires that lead to surface things like a sexual or gender identity. Beliefs from our culture and other things around us that shape how we see ourselves, how we see God, how we see others, life in general, and how that produces the fruit that we see on our tree, so to speak. Sorry, that was my best attempt at the tree model.
Well, and starting from the very seed of sin in all of us, and then in the soil, I mean, the model seems to go through the soil, the trunk, and the fruit, and it seems like it provides a very good kind of word picture.
Yeah, the soil in particular in there is the context in which that seed grows and is shaped. So why does your child believe the particular things they believe, desire the particular things they desire? Well, a lot of that is the context in which they're in. Largely the culture, the things they've experienced, their suffering has really shaped their sinful desire as well. Or desires that become overriding desires, I'll say, and leads to sin.
Kathy?
Chris, I wonder if you could, we do have a lot of pastors that are on our mailing list at Key Life, and this seems to be a subject that it really isn't dealt with a whole lot in the church. I'm thinking from all of the standpoints that we've talked about, those that are struggling with their identity, parents of those who are struggling with their identity, those of us who are friends of those parents, and et cetera. And it seems to me like there should be something going on in the church that you know, pastors, and I'm not trying to dump it all on them and saying, you know, if they would take care of it, everything would be fine. I don't mean that at all. But it seems to me that there's a pretty significant lacking in that area. I know you guys have a lot, you have materials and stuff that are, you know, available, but how do we get the clergy involved also in a way that, you know, is as another resource?
Sure. Yeah, I would say the biggest thing is just to not stick your head in the sand and be aware that these issues are in your church. Everyone is sexually broken, and whether you have particular parents that are have children in this situation or not, every one of us is sexually broken. So to neglect talking about sexual issues from the pulpit, in your discipleship groups, in your small groups, is really neglecting a huge aspect of our condition as broken people. And the reality is, with internet pornography, with the internet in general, with youth in your church, they're exposed to a whole host of things, and they are learning, they're being discipled. And so if you're not taking the ball and really getting on the front of this whole battle, then you're really remiss. And so I would say, to start, you don't have to be an expert on sexual issues. You know, if you want to learn more about it, look at our website. There's many that speak about and write about these issues nowadays. But I think the best thing you can do to help parents, to help strugglers themselves, is to be a safe place, to allow broken people to be broken in your congregation, and to not try to clean that up in any way, to speak of your own brokenness, your own wrestling with sin and temptation in appropriate ways, and model that transparency in appropriate ways from the pulpit, from conversations, in small group discussions, et cetera. And if you know individuals that are wrestling with these things, that are dealing with these issues, approach them, reach out to them. A lot of what shame does is cause us to isolate and cause us to think we're the only ones that could ever deal with this and no one would understand. But love, there's something about love that pursues. And if you have any inclination of someone wrestling with family issues in this way, pursue them, get to know them, seek to come alongside them. And even if you don't know the answers, to say, I'm with you in this, and we're going to learn about this together. And I'm going to make sure that I can walk with you as a shepherd, or give you the resources you need to be helped, or at least be safe and be heard in this situation.
Oh man, wise advice. Do you, Chris, we're coming to the end of this time with you. If you distill down all that you teach, what would you say is the biggest focus and the most important?
For parents in particular, I think the most important thing that we teach is that God is up to something good through this situation. I know that's common Christianese language, but that's the biggest success that I've seen in the parents' ministry, is just realizing that God had foreknowledge of this, that he is not taken off guard. And we believe things to be true about God, but when you're in situations like this, and for many parents, this is one of the biggest trials they've ever had to experience in their life or in their parenting. But God is in the midst of that, and he wants to draw you closer to himself through this, and wants to make you more like Christ through it. And there's actually a liberating experience through walking in obedience with how you're dealing with this trial. There's a liberating experience from being honest with what's impacting your heart, confronting your perceptions of how you view sexuality and gender and what your child's going through, and choosing to walk those murky waters of loving your child. You actually find more freedom from the grief and the hardship that really weighs you down, because you go fellowship with Christ in that way, I guess you could say, and become more like
Chris. Him. Thanks for taking the time to be with us. You guys check out harvestusa.org and download some of this material. Pass it to your pastor if you're not a pastor. Make sure that others start talking about it. There'll be people in your church that are offended, and they'll leave. And as soon as they're gone, you can get a bottle of champagne and celebrate and then become the church we were created to be. Chris, thanks a lot. We rise up and call you blessed.
Amen. Thank you.
Hi, this is Eric, producer of Steve Brown, etc. If you've been listening very long, you know I'm a struggling believer, and I'd love to share some things that have helped. At Key Life, we believe that the deepest message of the ministry of Jesus and the Bible is the radical grace of God for sinners and sufferers. And we have four mini books that'll help you believe that no matter what you've done or what you're going through, God's not mad at you. Feeling Guilty, Suffering, and Faith and Doubt by Steve Brown will help you apply healing biblical truth to where it hurts the most. And my mini book, The Gift of Addiction, How God Redeems Our Pain, shows that coming to the end of ourselves is actually the beginning of faith. These four mini books are in the Grace for Sinners and Sufferers mini book combo, and it's available at keylife.org for a suggested donation of $12. They're also individually available for a suggested donation of $4.
Man, great hour with Chris and some things that really need to be said. I sometimes kid about if you're a pastor and you want to wake people up and they're sleeping, just stop and say sex. And they'll wake up quickly. I had a student who told his pastor when he was home for Thanksgiving, and the pastor did it the next Sunday. And said, you know, Billy said, if I said sex, you would wake up. And he had a professor that said for me to try it, and it works. You're more awake than I've seen you in the last 30 minutes. And that gives you an idea about the no-no subjects in the church. Guys, we've got a sex-saturated culture. I mean, it's everywhere, in every place, and it's in your mind. And it's in my mind. It's just a part of how God created us. And if we don't talk about it, we're leaving out a significant portion. We got to talk about it without being embarrassed when we talk about it. We've got to be compassionate with one another. We have to cut slack for one another. And we need mostly to help each other. Because you can't deal with any issue by yourself very well. And when you deal with something as profound and pervasive of this, man, you can't. And the Bible has a lot. The Bible is filled with sex. It's everywhere. And we even take Song of Solomon and we make it into something spiritual instead of taking the joy that's given to us in Scripture about this. So that's the sermon. I don't preach sermons on this, but I really do have a concern for the church that we in some way deal with this. Kathy,
yes.
Who's going to be on next week?
Oh, this one's going to be interesting. We've never done anything like this before. The myth made fact, reading Greek and Roman mythology through Christian eyes. Our guest is Dr. Louis Marcos.
And Louis may not be saved. We're not sure, but we're gonna pursue that subject and see if we can do that biblically.
Well, he's at Houston Baptist Seminary.
Well, he's got to be a Christian, right? They wouldn't have
Houston Baptist University. Houston Baptist University.
We'll see next week, and we hope you join us next week. Same time, same place. Between now and then, don't do anything we wouldn't. And that, of course, gives you a wide, wide berth.